latest project with Ray. And while working with Ray for the last 5 or 6 years now has been really very delightful and a particular pleasure, also very successful and certainly scientifically stimulating. And one of the benefits, as many people of you certainly know, is that Ray appreciates very good food and good restaurants, and that's what you get to know. I think there was even a discussion at some point if you were to write a restaurant guide, an international one, to replace the Michelin. But that's probably something he'll tell us about during the next days. On a more personal note, for me, without Ray and his support, I probably wouldn't be where I am today. So I think it's a good opportunity to thank you, Ray. And the title of my talk today is Filament-Induced Surface Spiral Turbulence. It's close to the talk we just heard, and I'll explain what I mean by filament-induced surface spiral turbulence in a minute. So let's start with the notion of filament turbulence. So instead of looking at systems in two dimensions, now we're in three dimensions. What I've shown here is an example. It's a numerical simulation of a simple excitable media. And as you know, very typically for excitable oscillatory media, you can get wave patterns, or the extension from spiral wave patterns in 3D are scroll waves. And that's shown up here. So we have a scroll wave. The center of the wave here is actually a ring in the middle, and you see the wave fronts shooting out. The new thing in three dimensions is that there are instabilities. So the spiral wave pattern can break up in two dimensions. We know that. In three dimensions, that's also possible. However, there's a mechanism that's not present in two-dimensional systems, and that's the negative tension instability that was first conjectured by Winfrey, and other people established this notion later on, and the pictures I'm showing here are actually from the group by Alexander Mikhailov. And what happens is the following. So the filament is the extension of the spiral core or the vortex in 2D, and in three dimensions now it's a line, so it's a one-dimensional object. And this line can become unstable. And this is shown basically here in this series of snapshots. So you have this filament ring in the center, or vortex line, or whatever you want to call it, and that becomes unstable. It shows some fluctuation, so it starts to bend, and then it starts to break up, and you get filament turbulence to this type of mechanism. So now, in this snapshot now, we're just focusing on the filaments themselves. There are two mechanisms at work, one for the creation of filaments and one for the annihilation of filaments. So what's shown here, as you can see, you have three filaments in the medium. And the way a new filament is created is that one of them collides with the boundary. So this one here collides with the boundary, separates, and then suddenly you have four filaments. And that's the basic mechanism you can observe for creating filaments. The annihilation of filaments, it's a different type. What happens there is short filaments, as this one shown here or that one, the ends of the filament have to be normal to the surface. And that implies that there's a certain curvature effect at play. And that goes back to the work by Keener, and that shows that you have curvature-driven shrinkage. And as you can see in this series here, if you have a short filament, the curvature effects will lead to the annihilation of the filaments. So these are basically the two mechanisms that create or annihilate filaments. So if you were to be able to observe the full 3D medium in an experimental system, of course you can study the filament dynamics directly, and you can figure out which instability is at work if you enter this turbulent regime. However, very often, especially if you consider ventricular fibrillation, this is not possible. The observations are constrained to the surface. So now you can ask the following question. Is it possible to learn something about the instability that caused the turbulent regime just by looking at the surface? So what you can do is, you can just, as shown here, that we are now, I have a three-dimensional cube. We're only looking at the top surface. We look at the dynamics there, and since we're on the projection, just in 2D now, the filaments, the endpoints correspond to the center of the spiral course here. We study their dynamics. And that's what I mean by filament-induced surface spiral turbulence. And the fundamental question one would like to address very often is, can you really distinguish now, if you're constrained to the surface, to these observations, can you distinguish between this type of mechanism I just presented due to this instability of the filament, or can you distinguish between that mechanism and the mechanisms we know that are responsible for 2D spiral breakup? So that's the question I would like to address, and actually the answer is positive. We can distinguish between those. So the model we studied, it's the Barclay model. It's a simple model for an excitable medium where the parameters are chosen such that we're in the regime of low excitability, because that's the regime where we only have the filament instability. We don't have any of the 2D instabilities present in the mechanism. And well, we are looking, as I mentioned, at the statistical properties. So in the first step, what one can do, one of the simplest things you can think of is to just look at the statistics of the number of defect pairs on the surface of your three-dimensional cube. That's called N. So then you can try to get the distribution or the histogram of that. That's shown here. Those are the blue triangles. It has a certain shape. Another quantity you can look at are the creation and annihilation rates. So A here is the annihilation rate, C is the creation rate, and they can or cannot depend on the number of defect pairs present on the surface of the cube. And that's shown here. So the red cube boxes, that's the creation rate, and the circles, that's the annihilation rate. So why do we actually want to look at these? Well, we know for two dimensions, so if you just have a two-dimensional medium, there was a simple Markov model introduced by Gill, and that's based on the following assumptions. Let's assume the defect pairs, the endpoints of the filaments, are statistically independent entities, and then you make just assumption about the creation rate and the annihilation rate. In 2D systems, you would assume, well, that the creation rate in the simplest case is just constant, and the annihilation rate scales with n squared due to the fact that you have the conservation of topological charge. So spirals or spiral cores can only be created pairwise and annihilated pairwise. So that's why you get this n squared term. So then you can write down a very simple, as I said, equation, a rate equation, which is given here. It's just based on the creation and annihilation rates, where p is now the probability density function to have a certain number of defect pairs in the system. If you can solve this equation for these two assumptions here, and you find this distribution, that's a squared Poissonian distribution, and that has been experimentally verified in most cases. It has been also seen in many different model systems. One of them is the complex Ginzburg-Llano equation, but there are also other models where one has found exactly this kind of distribution. So that's known for two dimensions, right? And then, of course, there are some modifications if you introduce noise in the system or you have different boundary conditions. This is basically under the assumption that you have periodic boundary conditions. But those are just minor things. So let's see if now for the case of our medium, the three-dimensional Barclay model, what do we find for the creation annihilation rate? So that's basically the picture I showed before. So as you can see, let's focus on the creation rate. I said in two dimensions, typically observed, the creation rate is constant. That doesn't seem to be the case here. The next thing is, I said that the annihilation rate for two-dimensional systems should scale quadratically. Well, it looks a little bit quadratic, but we'll see in a minute that there's some additional term involved here. And the assumptions we have to make in order to describe the data we obtain are the following. First one is the creation rate. Now, it has a constant term, but it also has a linear term. And the annihilation rate also gets an additional linear term. You can use these rates now to solve, again, the same equation as before, and that's the solution you get. Well, it involves a couple of gamma functions and the Kummer function defined here. And if we compare that now to the directly measured results, those are, again, the blue triangles, and the theoretical predictions just based on the creation annihilation rates, that would be the red curve. What?
Yeah. They are going in the wrong direction, no?
What do you mean by wrong direction?
Some are going up, some are going down.
Well, you have some fluctuations, obviously, right? Because what you do is you simulate your model, you try to estimate the probability density function, but of course you only get a histogram, you have error bars associated with them, and that's why you have some fluctuations around the theoretical predictions. But overall, the statistical the predicted curve matches the data rather well. So now, of course, the thing to do is to understand why do we have these additional terms, these linear terms coming into play. And to answer this question, let's see how the whole rates and the whole dynamic depends on the system size. So what happens now if we change the size of the cube? Well, I've shown here two things. So this is the size of the cube, L. And on this, in blue, you see the average surface density of defects. The density actually goes down with the system size. So that means the endpoints of the filaments are sparser and sparser on the surface. The red curve here, that's the average volume per filament in the medium. As you can see, that increases. And again, it seems that the filaments are sparser and sparser if you get to larger and larger systems. So what would you expect now? For the larger systems, it seems that filaments are really far apart. There's maybe only weak interactions. And if you take that as your starting point, and let's say there are weak or no interactions, then actually for the filaments, you can derive, well, or you can make some arguments that the creation rate as well as the annihilation rate should scale linearly with n. So why is that? Well, the mechanisms... Oh, what's that? Why do I have that? Go back to these simple mechanisms. Well, with these two effects, the creation, obviously, if you have more filaments in the system, then you will create more defects, because each filament can collide with the surface. That will give you two new filaments. So that's that linear term. The other one is the annihilation of filaments. As I mentioned earlier, in 2D, you have this conservation of the topological charge. That's why they can only annihilate pairwise. That's, of course, also true here. But at any given time, only the endpoints of the same filament can annihilate. And that gives you a linear term. So based on that, making the assumption that it's really only a weak interaction, you can derive these terms here. But then, of course, the question that's left is why do we have this? Why do we still have strong, a strong constant term in the creation rate and also a strong quadratic term in the annihilation rate? And that's right now not absolutely clear. One hint is that there are still some interactions. And what's shown here is now the total filament length in the medium as a function of time for a given system size. Now, I've rescaled actually with the system size squared here. And if you look at the dynamics, or the total filament length in the medium, you can see the dynamics gets more and more intermittent. That has already also been observed for different media by different people, namely Zaritsky. And the reason for that is that there are interactions between the filaments, if you go to large system sizes, that lead to this intermittent dynamics. And that's basically you get triple strands of filaments as intermittently stable states. And that's something you can actually, you probably have already noticed in these figures here. So in this case here, you have these three filaments that are tightly together. And what that means, it effectively generates a three-arm scroll wave. That has, of course, a higher frequency than the standard wave. That will push all the other filaments out of the system. So the annihilation of filaments is not only curvature-driven, but also for these large systems, they seem to be driven by these higher frequency of these intermittently stable states. And that, of course, should also have an effect on the creation and annihilation rates, obviously. And this is basically now this system size dependence summarized in this graph here, showing now the different coefficients for the creation and annihilation rates. So what happens now really if we increase the system size? You see that this the linear term, the linear creation term increases. The linear annihilation term increases. So that's basically as expected if you assume that it goes into a regime where they only weakly interact. Moreover, the quadratic term of the annihilation rate also goes to zero. So that's also in line with that argument. However, you still have this strong constant component for the creation rate. And, well, as I mentioned, you have this ongoing interaction between filaments, and that's probably the cause for exactly that. to summarize, what we have succeeded to show on this project is that basically that the statistical properties of the surface defect media turbulence, they allow really to distinguish between filament-induced defect media turbulence. That's what I mean by Winfried's mechanism, because he was the person who proposed this mechanism, and any other known 2D spiral breakup mechanism. The specific difference is really the linear contribution to the creation rate. That allows a clear distinction. And that's also there, even if you have the 2D case and you include these other effects I mentioned earlier, like the boundary effects or noise terms, they are not able to give you a linear contribution to the creation rate. So this is really the main distinction between those different instabilities and the underlying mechanisms. And this is also true if you look at different geometries, so spherical shells or even solid spheres gives you very similar results. So coming back to the motivation, ventricular fibrillation in the heart, where people are interested now, what's the underlying mechanism for ventricular fibrillation? It should be possible to verify that just by studying the surface of the heart and resolve this ongoing discussion about the underlying instability that causes ventricular fibrillation, if indeed it is related to the spiral wave breakup, obviously. And with that, I'm almost at the end. And thank you for your attention. Just stop here. Thanks.